Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka, welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us on the line today is Ms. Julia Raffaele, who is the CEO of Associated Media Publishing, publishers of Cosmopolitan, Marie Claire, House and Leisure, Good Housekeeping, and WOW, Woman on Wheels. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So glad that you can join us today as being part of our Women in the Media series. And to go straight in, you're CEO of Associated Media Publishing, and in that role, you're tasked with numerous responsibilities, ranging from business development, managing personnel, marketing, finance, to serving audiences with relevant content, as well as delivering on, crucially, the audience figures for the commercial aspect of the publishing business. And these days, it's migrated, well, it goes across multiple platforms from print to online. Can you share with us what your greatest challenges in the role?
I think your greatest challenge in business today is transforming your business and looking, especially in an established business. We've been around for 32 years, so that's quite an established business. But transforming your business, so almost thinking like a startup, but you've got resources. And I think your biggest challenge is the transformation, almost being in the eye of the storm, which means, you know, you've got to keep your foundation business healthy and strong and profitable, because that is what it's all about in the end, because that's going to allow you to keep as many people employed as possible, but yet also investing in the future. So because the world has changed, the economy and the world, you know, in itself has changed so radically, I think that's probably the biggest challenge is, you know, keeping your foundation business healthy and also looking to the future and making sure that you are set up and sustainable for your next S-curve in a business cycle.
True. It is having the foundational business that is the bread and butter, and often there's this ratio of sort of 70% going towards the foundational business to keep going, and then a 30% towards looking at the new components to be sustainable for the future.
I think especially today, where you're busy trying to learn about all the technology that's available, all the platforms that are available, the skill sets that are required to make these platforms really work, and there's a very, very, very apt concept called the world after midnight, and that speaks to the fact that you've gone to sleep at night, and by the time you wake up in the morning, the world's just changed again. So, you know, if you're an agile thinker, if you are afraid to test new concepts and you know, learn as you go along, and not everything, you know, does work out as you want it, and, you know, be able to learn lessons and change quickly and move forward, then you're in a lot better position than somebody else who isn't an agile learner.
I think those are wonderful concepts, and you're right in terms of the way the future is going, that everything has got faster. You've got to keep up with the pace, and it's learning on the go. Now, we've spoken about your greatest challenges. Have you got any particular milestones that you want to achieve in your capacity as CEO?
Well, I would like to set ourselves up in terms of our new business model. I've taken one business model, which is the traditional publishing model, and that was very successful for the last 32 years, mostly due to my mother, who founded the business, and when she founded the business, she was 45. So I often tell that to people, that, and it's surprising to them, that our entire business was actually was started by her when she was 45, and she's been an incredible role model. But for me, it's now taking this legacy business and actually transforming the business model into a whole new set of partnerships, a new set of business metrics, and a whole lot of different opportunities with our brand. And obviously that sounds very easy to do, and it isn't, but I think that will be what I would like to do, and that's what I focus most on, is how am I going to change this business model so that we can keep publishing these incredible brand across multiple platforms and employing the incredible talent that we do have in our business, and employing as many people as possible. That's also a very important thing because we've got 123 people in our business. So that's always very top of mind for me is, you know, keeping people in South Africa employed. And also working with a new generation of people has its own kind of set of adjustments. But it's very exciting because the whole new generation of people, they think differently, they work differently. It's very, very exciting.
It sounds incredibly exciting, and taking this as an entire transformation from one business model over into a new business model and moving from sort of a first generation to a second generation family business with yourself and as well as with your mom, who I believe is celebrating her 80th birthday this year.
Yes, can you believe it? Very, very energetic and active 80-year-old.
And if we reflect, though, given that she started the business at 45 years old, and if we go back to 32 years ago, it wouldn't have been the norm for women to do something like that.
No, I think she was quite unique in kind of the position she took and the torch that she held up for women. And the thing about her is that, you know, she didn't accept no. So she loves connecting people, but she's also like always, you know, on the hunt for an opportunity. And I think that almost like is the basis of any entrepreneurial kind of thinker. So she was unique also because she was actually, you know, came here from Britain and married my father, who was South African. And she just so championed women's rights in South Africa. And she was such an iconic figure of somebody who, you know, competed in a boardroom with a lot of men, obviously, and really like stood her ground, but she's very gracious. So not overcompensating, not becoming too hard, but, you know, always being the champion of basically equal rights. And also doing it while she had a family. So, you know, she, there are four of us in our family, four kids, and she kind of, you know, maintained and managed that balance. And I think that's something that women really struggle with in a workplace because, you know, if you have a family and you want to have a family and you want to have a great family life, but you're also a career person, how does one actually get that balance right? But you can do it, and she always believed, you know, you could, and obviously supported women who worked for her and with her, you know, to actually achieve that.
And on that note, could you share her winning formula for managing the balance? I know not have been balanced equally at times, but for managing to succeed, raising her family and having a fantastically successful career.
Well, I mean, you'd have to interview her and get her own personal voice in for as far as that. I can only speak in terms of a child and growing up in an environment where, you know, the conversation around the dinner table was always about current affairs. You know, obviously a lot of business was spoken. We had a very stable childhood, so that was very lucky. We didn't move around, and so, you know, having a working parent, two of them, obviously my mother as well as my father, and that was always our norm. And for me, I never questioned it. I grew up in that environment, and that was always how I suppose I was going to end up as well, because my mother always worked, and I've always worked, and for me, that's the norm. So I think she had an incredible infrastructure which supported her. I think she did have a business. She worked for NASPES, you know, originally when she started Fair Lady. And then she started Cosmopolitan. That was the first title in our company when she started our company with Falker Colonel and my father at the same time. And so that was her own business. So she could kind of structure her time and when and where she worked, obviously differently. But I think, you know, so it's about balance, and it's also about, you know, allocating like quality time when you are with your kids. So I never felt that we didn't get enough of her, but she was also very confident about the decision to work and have a family, you know. I think one of the things that trips women up Speaking also because I in our company we have mostly women, so obviously we are very supportive of women who want to have children, and not everybody does, but women who work and have families. But I think that what trips women up is that this enormous guilt that they feel. So even though they want a career because it's stimulating and gives them financial independence and also basically allows them an opportunity and a platform to exercise what skills they have outside of just, you know, say, doing just looking after a family, so in addition to that. But I think we feel enormous guilt, and that's very stressful for women, and it's very hard to get around it.
But with the publishing house being predominantly female employees, can you share with us a little bit about your policy concerning gender equality?
Okay, so, I mean, for us, you know, we don't have any kind of glass ceiling for women, obviously, because our brands are not all, but primarily they are brands that speak to women, and our target market and our audience is mostly women. But in terms of gender equality, I mean, we obviously want gender equality and do support it and do cover it and give it exposure as much as we can. But, you know, just in terms of, say, gender quotas, I mean, we look for people who can do the job and who can deliver and who have got the right attitude and who are entrepreneurial in their mindset. So on the one hand, we'll obviously cover a lot of the gender equality legislation and try to give that kind of content as much exposure as possible. But then also in terms of the workforce, it's not something that we've had to kind of consciously address in our own workforce because we do have gender equality built in.
And I would say it's probably almost a natural outcome given the nature of the audiences that you serve. But saying that, on some of the interviews I've had with other ladies within the publishing space who haven't necessarily worked for female-oriented titles have said that within the publishing space, that in the sort of the lower levels, you may have more female employees, but up within the upper echelons of management, that in some organizations had still had quite a high profile of men. Whereas with your publishing house, you seem to have the female dynamic penetrating right the way through from top to bottom.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, if you talk about unequal pay, for example, like that would never be an issue in our business. So you get paid for what you do and you get, you know, paid fairly and incentivized fairly and appreciated and acknowledged for what you do, not because of your gender. It's almost like such a foreign concept for us because it is we are an independent business and a second-generation family business, and it was started by women and run by women. And so for us, it's almost like it does go without saying. And I know that's an unusual situation to be in, but that is the cornerstone, the foundation of our business.
I think it's a wonderful situation to be in if you're a woman working within your industry.
Yeah.
But perhaps it's a model that almost needs to roll out in terms of having more female-owned businesses so that you don't have this disparity between salaries and gender wage gaps.
I think that's always going to be the goal to aim for, is more female-run, more female-owned businesses. You know, women are absolutely brilliant in many ways, but the one thing that I have learned about women is, which is quite a fundamental difference between women and men, is, in my opinion, you know, women are extremely good, really, in fact, exceptional in a lot of areas in business, but they almost seem more happy to be exceptional in business, but men focus on being someone who creates value in a business. You know, they are almost focused on creating value, and women are more focused on doing a brilliant job. If you know what I mean, there's a difference between the two. So it's something I've seen, and when I look at men, they are kind of completely very, very focused and committed to creating value. And you need that when you run a business, you know, at that level. It's got to be about creating value.
And I think, unfortunately, there's a report that I can't recall the details of, but I'll send it through to you, of an American lady who did a study, And she looked at the different dynamics in terms of the measures, that people, how people are measured in the workplace. And why women weren't advancing in certain aspects was because they'd focused on different KRAs, whether it was about being a good team player or, as you said, doing your job. But they weren't directing their enough attention in terms of strategically advancing the business, because that's where the value lies.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'd love to see that report.
We've spoken about gender equality to a certain extent, and this program, Womanity, Woman and Unity, is all about gender equality. And we're seeing more and more movements globally regarding gender equality. Now, taking into consideration the challenges and successes that women's legal rights have had over the last few years, what areas do you think still need attention with respect to women?
Okay, so I definitely think that the whole way that maternity leave is worked into businesses from a legislation point of view, from a tax relief point of view, and it doesn't even have to be for women. It's a primary caregiver, which often does end up being the woman. So I do think that if the government could almost, and this is a completely original thought, so I don't think, I mean, I'm forever hopeful that they might do it, but wouldn't it be amazing if you paid less tax if you had children or something, where, you know, because at the end of the day, how does the government support women and men, parents, who are bringing children up, in a way that gives a bit of relief and supports them? So, you know, I don't know if that's something that would ever be legislated or ever, you know, be introduced as an idea. I do think that, you know, reading is such an important part of education, and it all starts at the school level, you know. And I think if something could be done, you know, with gender equality in school at a very young age, because that's when it all starts, you know. And I do see that changing. I mean, I have two very young children, and I can see it, you know, in terms of the awareness of the school system, and there seems to be a lot more gender equality now than there ever has been, which is great to see.
And you're right, socialization about issues, about norms, in the same way that you said when you were growing up, it was, for you, it was the norm to have your mom working and your dad working. And in the same token, that behavior of being able to groom children in the right way, that'll become the norm for them.
Yeah, but how do you support women who are going to produce a family, because that's always going to be, you know, the woman's role. I mean, you know, to be pregnant for 9 months and carry a child, not just maternity or paternity leave. You know, in other countries, it's almost, I'm just talking about South Africa compared to other countries, where women, you know, are supported in a different way, because we've got an office which is full of women, and sometimes we joke about it and say it's actually contagious, because, you know, they have a lot of pregnancies and maternity leave. But how do you support businesses who support women? Because I don't know the facts and the stats, but maybe, you know, when people employ people, we almost take it as a given. But some businesses don't really support women who are not going to be there while they're on maternity leave. They don't support them as much or enough.
I think it's a really interesting area. I certainly don't have the answers yet. I was quite intrigued by Pick and Pay, who have got 9 months of paid maternity leave, as opposed to the government's legislated 4 months maternity leave. Some organizations have creche facilities, which government spoke about when members of parliament, lady members of parliament, went in. And that was one of the things that they set up. So by having your children near you, it allows you to do your work. And when you need to attend to them, they're there on the premises, but not interfering with what you're doing. And it also crosses the line of, it really is the sort of integration of work-life balance, and not having things physically divided environments.
Absolutely, because I do think that this preys on women's minds when they decide that they do want to have children, and they are in a successful career, they almost feel like they have to make the choice. And it shouldn't be like that. It should be that, I mean, it's normal to work. And you're not going to be, you know, compromising something. So it's a mindset and an attitude. And if you look at also the way people are working today, like millennials are not working from offices. They work from coffee bars and restaurants and workflow, you know, places. And so if you just think about it, that's a whole mindset and a different way of working. And why wouldn't it be the same with people who want to have children and want to contribute to a workforce and, you know, have a successful career?
Yes, you shouldn't be penalized for bringing forward or giving birth to the next generation.
Yeah.
Today, we're talking to Ms. Julia Raffaele, who is the CEO of Associated Media Publishing.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chakachaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Balka every week on this day at this time.
You were listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. Today, we're talking to Ms. Julia Raffaele, who is the CEO of Associated Media Publishing. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Julia, we've spoken a lot about your career, the development that's happened for women within your industry in particular, and also almost in the microcosm of the business that you've created. In corporate South Africa, at senior management level, according to Business Women's Association of South Africa's 2015 census of JSE-listed companies, women only account for 29.3% of executive managers, 21.8% of directors, 9.2% chairpersons, and 2.4% CEOs. Considering that women represent 52% of the South African population, they're significantly underrepresented in leadership and managerial roles. Taking learnings from the public sector, where women are well represented in South Africa, it's 42%, how do you think we can improve the representation of women in leading meaningful roles like corporate boards or top managerial positions than they have today?
Okay, so I think, again, it comes back to a lot of the things that we were talking about earlier. I think that women have to not be afraid to be strong leaders. I still think that there's a bit of a mindset that you can't, you know, to really lead as a senior level at the top of a CEO position or sit on a board, you do have to be very strong, I would say. You don't have to be hard. So I think you can be, but you do need to be, have a lot of strength of conviction. And I think that sometimes, and I don't know when, at what part this starts in a woman's life cycle, but sometimes women almost don't want to be very strong or seen as a sort of strong leader, because I think women do, and this is a big generalization, but they don't like to be in a conflict position. And I don't think men have a problem with that at all. Maybe it's a more natural position for them to be in. So they do tend to be, they tend to lead confidently. I think it's very sad that those percentages reflect how few women are in senior leadership positions, because there's so many capable, smart, brilliant women. But I think women almost, as I said before, they sometimes feel that it's like along the way, you know, they tend to not want to almost be in that position of ultimate responsibility, because they might believe that, you know, you've got to make a lot of tough decisions. But if you can instill in your child that as long as those decisions are fair, and made from the right point of view. So in other words, the health of the business, not an emotional decision. It's not a personal decision. You're always trying to protect the business by making the right decision, because that will effectively protect everybody's job in the long term. By growing your business, you're going to grow more jobs. So I think women must lead confidently, and it's the skill of combining the clarity of vision and focus and ability to make the right decisions. And men also react very well to, you know, rational arguments. So there are a lot of very smart women out there, and women can cope at any level. I've got absolutely no doubt. But they've got to have the confidence to do so.
We've spoken about the attitudes and attributes, so having strength, having confidence, having the conviction to, in terms of looking at women coming into those environments at leadership level, to not be afraid of pursuing that action, and when decisions are made, that it must be made in the interest of the business. But despite all of that, and your opinion may be slightly biased given that you are within a female publishing group, what is your view in terms of quotas, on gender quotas?
Okay, so I think that quotas are good because they do crystallize a focus, and they do address a lot of issues which do need to be addressed in terms of quotas. However, I don't think it's legislation about quotas that's going to be the most effective way to bring about real change. You know, it obviously plays a part, but the real change is going to come from changing people's minds and not from a number, you know. And I think that the media can play a huge role by bringing about, by finding the change makers and putting them on the huge platforms that we actually have now across all of our digital channels. So I think that, you know, when you have got no flexibility to find the right person for a job, whether they are female or male, and I do think finding the talent, because that's the biggest investment in any business, you know, that can be challenging as it is. But I think in terms of gender quotas, it is something which is required to readdress it, the balance.
And you touched on an important point there in terms of looking at profiling change managers. And in effect, when we look at this program and channel, it really is about profiling women like you to demonstrate, you know, almost as a role model effect of what is possible, and to cascade that so that it's a view which will be seen by both men and women.
Absolutely. And I also think, you know, one thing that I was very lucky to have was mentors who I found, and some not in a formal sense of the way, but more from the point of view that I think that women as mentors, if there was a formal way for more young up-and-coming women to have access to the right type of mentor, that can be, you know, really one of the most important and fundamental opportunities for young women, because it's somebody who, you know, they can relate to and they can learn from. And I really believe in mentoring. And I think that, you know, if I was giving advice to a young girl today, I would say, you know, find somebody who can mentor you, and also, if possible, in a more formal environment, because then it's a commitment where both people commit to the process, and that's how you learn. And it's by, you know, auditing your life experiences and challenges against a female role model, you can really benefit from that process.
And I would also say that it's taking the learnings from that mentor, whoever they may be, and it's a case of almost riding on the shoulders of someone who's walked the walk before you, so you don't have to go through the pain of their journey. It can help you elevate a little further.
Absolutely.
We're coming towards the latter part of the show now, and throughout the different radio programs we've had, one of the questions that I've asked all my guests who've made tremendous achievements in their respective fields of expertise is about some of the factors that they consider have contributed to their success. Some people speak about hard work, others talk about perseverance, the influence of a particular person in their life. What would you say have been key drivers to your success?
I think obviously my mother was my major role model. I mean, both parents who've always worked really hard and had integrity, and almost like instilled in all of their children a very conscientious, hardworking kind of culture, and I think not expecting a shortcut, but almost like, you know, being very resilient and focused and determined. And you do get that from your parents if you are lucky. And so that was, and I think working so closely, you know, alongside my mother, in a family business, obviously has had a major, major impact on my own personal experience. And that's been a privilege because we have never had one argument. We don't agree on everything and we often disagree, but actually we've never had an argument. So I think just almost like learning to navigate a business in a family business sense is, you know, that's had a major, major, major impact on my own personal career. And then also, you know, just exposing myself to being hungry to learn and living in other countries. And if you do get that opportunity, or just almost, always having an open mind and not being afraid to learn things and try new things. I lived in another country. That was also definitely, and I was a student there and waited on tables and, you know, you do what you have to do. But that also definitely was a great experience for me. And I think also working in different industries, and then growing and learning and making and just always constantly trying to improve on what you do has also helped me a lot and helped me in our particular business and set of challenges, which are quite unique to publishing, I think.
Well, it sounds like you've got a tremendous appetite in terms of expanding boundaries, whether they are physical or educational or learning or otherwise. Can you tell us what's the best lesson you've learned during your career?
Never give up. if it doesn't work this way, try another way. Find the best partners and collaborate with them. It's the company you keep. That's about five. But it is the company you keep, I think, which often, you know, determines your success in the long term. So, for example, I mean, when we launched Oprah Magazine and we ran it, we published it for 12 years, that was an incredible opportunity, which we probably wouldn't have had if we weren't in business with Hearst Magazine. So that's an example of the company you keep. And the never give up is really fundamental to where we are now in terms of transformation, just coming back to my very first point. And not, you know, like having a positive attitude. And that's probably the last point I would make is if you have a positive attitude, then, you know, and it's not so easy because obviously there are a lot of challenges and hurdles that everyone in everyone's life is going to come across. But sort of, you know, getting up the next day and thinking positively, so glass half full instead of half empty.
I think those are all really practical words of advice. And lastly, as we close out the program today, could you please share a few words of inspiration which you'd like to pass on to young girls and women in Africa who are listening to the show?
So I was told my 5-year-old daughter, you can do anything. And I tell my 5-year-old son the same. And I think if you are bringing up children, it's also our responsibility to grow up children that have got a healthy self-esteem and that treat people, men and women alike, with respect and with integrity. And for me, that's just been the most important kind of cornerstone of what drives your actions, you know, and especially in a legacy business where our name is on the door. That's been a guiding, you know, driving force for me.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day today to share your story, your history, some of the work components that you've done, some of the private elements that you've done, and for giving some invaluable lessons. So thank you so much.
Again, thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Ms. Julia Raffaele, CEO of Associated Media Publishing.